Welcome, beautiful soul. Welcome to Galactic Retreat, Embody Your Unique Soul Expression. I'm your host, Rayania Cheyenne. Today, I have a beautiful human being, well, a multi-dimensional galactic being in human form, Jean An, with us today. Welcome, Jean.
Hi, Rayna. Hi, everyone. It's great to see everyone here.
Yeah, it's so such a joy to connect with you again since our last retreat. And whenever I think of Galactic, I just think of you as you are such an embodiment of working, opening up to and opening up to the various intergalactic and galactic consciousness. And I know you also support people opening up to their gifts and making contact. So thank you for being here. And for those that doesn't know you that well, which I doubt, but then could you just briefly introduce yourself? Like, I know you started as a scientist, neuroscientist, and all the way, to 2024. How would you describe yourself, if you look back right now on your awakening journey?
In a sentence, you could say Yale neuroscientist turned energy healer. If you wanted to make it kind of a popular byline or line, or just scientist goes into multidimensional work, which is like a juxtaposition of perhaps opposites, you could say, which makes it catchier. But it's just been an unfolding, I would say, of my own spiritual path. And I mentioned, and you mentioned, I was sort of in a very traditional pathway in terms of academic science in neurobiology. And I got into that field mostly kind of two streams. One, my father was a physician. He really wanted me to be a physician. So I kind of went into the kind of biomedical work, and I really also, embodied that. I think I was more, or I was very focused on the healing aspect of, being in kind of the medical sciences. And then I think this interest in consciousness and healing led me to do, was still embodying kind of this scientific aspect, going into neuro science or neurobiology, rather than, or in contrast to, maybe doing something which I probably was more interested in, but like psychology. So it was sort of still kind of being more medical in a sense, but maybe an avenue to still maybe explore consciousness. But right around when I was yeah, I was about towards the end of my PhD. My mentor's wife, who was also a very famous scientist, they're very well-known scientists. His name was Pashko Rakesh. His wife, Patricia Goldman Rakesh, who made these major kind of landmark studies on working memory. She was hit by a car, like, just, it was like random, like on the streets of New Haven, where Yale is, and died. And I think that was a little bit of a wake-up call to, for me, to maybe embody more what was truly within me, rather than maybe trying to straddle something, kind of make something work within maybe the, the traditional role of science. So soon after, I went to a Medicine Buddha retreat that was in the Catskills, in this retreat center called Benla. It's run by, it's actually kind of was gifted to the Dalai Lama and run by Robert Thurman and his wife, Nina Thurman. People may know them as just, he's just a very well-known American Buddhist scholar and teacher. And I think that initiation kind of opened me up to the, to maybe embodying this really strong interest in healing. Yeah, and then soon after, I started to learn with different energy healers, which we could discuss. But that was, the beginning of the kind of shift from traditional science into healing, or more of the spiritual healing. And that was around 2000, like we were dating some of the things in my kind of path around 2000, and I would say four or 2004. So I would say within about 3 years, or 3 or 4 years, I was kind of fully into healing around 2007, 2008.
So I'm just curious that there's always like a benevolent forces or you would say the guidance that's pulling us forward and things will unfold. And 20 years later, I'm curious, how would you say, because I'm just wondering that how would you say is your unique expression, like unique journey? Jin An as the multi-dimensional as Jin An.
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, it's a little bit like, how we have a seed, we plant it, and there's kind of a mystery of how it, you go, maybe you planted it, and then 20 years later you come back and it's of course grown a little bit, and it's kind of a mystery how it grows. But I was kind of present maybe for most of the days of that growth, let's say in 20 years. Yeah, it has been an interesting path. I think there has been a sense of independence, like I have learned from a lot of great teachers who I continue to learn from. But there was this sort of sense of, following kind of my own drumbeat, so to speak. I've seen that rather than kind of following any one particular path, although there's some main ones there. And I think that's, kind of what maybe led, when that little byline I said, if you just it could, put together the scientists and this, then the multidimensional, let's say healer or energy workers, it seems such like where's like a wide divide, like how did that happen? And I think it was just kind of following sort of what was inside me was kind of the main thing. So I think maybe unfolding, soul growth, and maybe sort of following my own drumbeat would be some of those main themes of what I would say happened.
As because I feel, when we look back, it seems so natural and organic, things just happen. But while we are in the middle of maybe, different stages of the awakening, and then it's almost like whenever we awaken to a new level of us, it challenges certain conditioning and belief and right at the part of us, and it could be triggering for a lot of people, right? Like triggering self-doubt and fear of being abandoned, like isolated or like question, like is this real or because the mind wants to justify, I imagine. Well, so how was your journey and how did you go through this expansion again and again and again to allow your multidimensionality or your gifts to reveal themselves to you.
Yeah, definitely. I think the path for people on the planet now, and we talked about people being born now, and even interesting ways of incarnating now or intuitively, is there's kind of unique challenges now. And I think one of the things I was mentioning was this idea of we're all kind of following our own soul's guidance. I mean, we have teachers, we have kind of lineages that maybe we find, maybe usually from past life connections. But a lot of people, I think, and myself, the characteristic I found was kind of ultimately following, trying to find my own way, kind of that inner guidance. I think a lot of people on the planet are doing that path, like maybe 300 or 400 years ago, let's say, if people believe in reincarnation, if you were interested in the spiritual path, you may have been in like a monastery or a spiritual group, and maybe stayed there your entire life, which could be very fruitful, but you're kind of guided. It was very much like someone was able to let you know what to do next. And there was probably a lot of internal learning, of course, but maybe you didn't have to figure out every next move, like you're saying, kind of being in this lost state, which a little bit like maybe when you're kind of in high school, you're still kind of independent, but you're kind of you have your parents there a little bit. But maybe if you go off after that and live alone, it's great to be independent, but a lot of times you're there not really knowing exactly what to do, the next step. And I think for a spiritual path, a lot of people incarnating now, or like, in the last 50 years have been doing that type of path where they're really finding things out for themselves, which is kind of maybe a new type of pattern than previous incarnations.
Yeah. So I'm curious, do you feel like what qualities is required when we are moving through these stages and like almost like opening up more of to our own guidance and then to find our own unique gifts, right? Like, because 100 people doing Reiki, it will like they will have 100 different frequencies, right? Because of our soul signature, our past lifetime energy or the work we have gone through in different lifetimes or in different galaxies even. So what qualities would you have you observed that is most needed for people to go through this stage of like, oh, I'm not quite sure what is going on, because no one could tell me exactly what I'm here to do or create.
Yeah, I think it's a truly creative act, with our life when we're doing that. From my experience and the characteristics is this being comfortable with being uncomfortable or like not knowing. That's kind of the beauty. I think there's the subconscious beauty of following a well-trodden path. Like in neuroscience or science, you definitely let's say up to your master's degree, like let's say you started even in high school, but definitely starting in college, and then those first 2 years in graduate school, it's sort of what classes to take, like you have to take this and then do pass these exams. The kind of where the creative act in science comes in is like in order to get the PhD, you have to create something new. So no one really knows exactly what you're going to create. I mean, you have a mentor who can help you. So there's some area of knowledge, but you, in order to kind of get that PhD or write your thesis as a PhD, it's got to be something new. So I felt that the same creative void, kind of like you said, floating or the unknown during that period, because you can't go find that in the book and learn it. You're going to have to go find it out in the ethers, basically, through your research. And then in this kind of more spiritual unfolding that people are going, even very young, like you said, maybe even in the tens or the 20s and so forth, in the sense of being really spiritually independent. It's really that void state, which is the essence of creativity. You're in the womb of creation, which is like a, also correlated with the void, which means there's no like handrails. So I think the main thing is being very comfortable, or at least getting comfortable with sort of that free fall that maybe some people do skydiving or maybe like a snorkel, go, you can also do it in the ocean, like in the backdrop. When you're just sort of like in the going down deep into the water, just kind of being comfortable with the unknown.
Yeah, I love that. Well, I had recently my second skydiving experience,
Oh,
and
wow.
because I had the previous experience, so I was able to enjoy it a bit better. And I remember it was just because I know it's completely safe, so it's really about working with my own fear. And when I compare that to the spiritual void that we are going through, I feel that void sometimes is like, okay, I know I am here to create, and I have my guidance, I have my teams. And when we go to different session, people will say, okay, you have guides and here a different consciousness that are coming. So could you share, do you remember like when you first were prompt to offer your Arcturian healing method, like, 'cause it was new. So how did you overcome, I don't know, discomfort, or was it always easy for you to just trust and then just be in that space of following the nudges?
No, I definitely remember that kind of how that the first offering publicly, actually a person who owned a naturopathic sort of health center. She didn't know I was kind of directly interested in the Arcturians, but we had been doing kind of interdimensional sort of ET contact work together, some of this Stephen Greer based meditations outdoors in Connecticut at the time. And she just said, like I'm connected to the Arcturians, and not knowing that I was directly connected either or thinking about them. And either she said they told her maybe I should offer something, or she was wondering if I connected to them too.
Right.
And so we had the first event. It wasn't a training. It was, to tune people. It was more to just maybe have that energy come through for a group. But then soon after that, like then I kind of connected with the Arcturians to download the level one, what's currently the level one. And maybe in 3 months or so, yeah, maybe that was in the summer. I remember it was actually maybe the solstice, and then the first level one class was actually in like early December that year of 2011. Yeah, so it's kind of they're very interrelated to with someone else, or someone else kind of also inspiring or reflecting. Doing that opening for the Arcturian work.
Yeah, I love you bringing up, you share this experience, because it's almost show is showing that we are never are alone. Like there's never a solo project, because everything like you are bringing through, it's like a co-creation, right? Like, so there will be people who facilitate or open the doorway for you, and then you do your part, and people come together to allow more of the download to come through, right? So it's almost like we can take the pressure of our own, I don't know, achieving and perfectionism, or like bringing all this, I don't know, figuring out all by ourselves.
Yeah, I think you brought up a good point. Like I've kind of studied this idea. It came from Rudolf Steiner, and then I learned it from a teacher's name, Robert Gilbert of the Vesica Institute. And it's this idea that, we have a soul purpose, an incarnational purpose, but it's very much interwoven, or like you're saying, interconnected with other people's soul purpose. So what Steiner was kind of pointing out and Robert Gilbert was emphasizing is if we can't individually remember that soul purpose and actually carry it out, sometimes you're holding a piece for someone else's soul plan. So it's sort of like if you don't get yours done, then they have to find another way to get theirs done. And of course, a lot of this is occurring subconsciously or superconsciously. Like we don't necessarily know exactly that, we just kind of feel into it. So, like Rudolf Steiner's purpose was to actually, which he knew, was to bring to the West the esoteric idea of karma and reincarnation. But it needed the groundwork of like a Western esotericism that was like newly brought through. So there was a German professor who was a very high initiate reincarnated who was supposed to do that, but he kind of forgot, basically, as is very possible that many people maybe in the similar. And he was too far into his professor life, when Steiner met him, that he realized he wasn't going to get that done. The professor wasn't going to, so then Steiner wasn't going to be able to land his purpose. So then Steiner had to take on that purpose first. And then in the last 3 years of his life, Steiner gave all these lectures on karma and reincarnation, sort of his magnum opus. It's in these volume eight, like eight book volume on karmic biography. But most of his life he was spent doing sort of doing what this other person kind of maybe was meant to do. So some things like this can happen. That was just one example.
I love that because I think it's like in the spirituality community or teaching, we hear often about timelines, right? Like our own, like each moment we could jump through different timelines, different potentials, and then we do not like. With each choice we make, we will go into a different reality, and then there'll be people who come into, dance in this tapestry of destiny or purpose, so to speak. And of course, because we are human, no, we do not always awaken and have the courage or the trust or whatever, just like, oh, let's go for the full expression or full potential realization. So right. So this is very interesting. Yeah, I'm curious, like for this, like we talk about timeline, Heist timeline, and how does that what is your experience at the moment, like when you look at your own timeline, if you're aware of that, or when your experience of creating or moving through your timeline, what would you say?
Yeah, no, I think that's great. Yeah, I kind of the metaphor or the image, like the spider's web, we're all interconnected, like we're moving on the web. And sometimes maybe we perceive ourselves not in a web, but kind of like a capsule moving by itself. But like we're all very interconnected, invisibly, and of course visibly too, but a lot more like an iceberg, much more invisibly. So what we do or what we need to do is somewhat interconnected to what other beings and other people are doing who are, very closely connected on the web too. But even far away spatially, the web's still interconnected. So we may be, still interconnected to some beings or people who are very far away. Like some, let's say, for example, someone who hasn't incarnated yet, the soul who hasn't incarnated yet is kind of very much connected to what we're doing right now, our soul path as an incarnated being, if you're listening to this right now. But yeah, I think timelines are very unique. One of the things I recognize, kind of in conversation, so to speak, with my guides or just sort of spiritual help is, I think there is sort of a general timeline one's moving on. And if it's pretty aligned to what I think your soul was meant to do, your guides want to maybe keep you and of course your higher self on that. But then you may perceive that you wanted to make a change. Like that was my experience. Maybe it's for someone else or help someone else. But it's not that easy, I think, for all those because there's so many interconnections. If you're already on your major timeline to do a major shift, because a lot of these beings who you if you shift it out into another timeline, you affect a lot of other people. Like you won't be showing up physically, like in a let's say a certain country anymore, because you've let's say moved to another country, for example. So there might have been some important meetings that you were supposed to have physically. So I think in my experience, the guides will allow the move if it really improves something for like usually a lot of other beings. If you're already fundamentally on your timeline. So yeah, that was my experience. That kind of I don't know if that's hard and fast. It's just one anecdotal experience of myself, but if one's going to really make a huge shift in their timeline, if you're already, I think, fundamentally on the kind of path, then it's usually to help a lot of other beings that will be allowed, so to speak, like your guides kind of like open it up for you or your higher self.
Yeah, I There's so many I wanted to ask you, but and while we are on this line, I know that many people actually feel that they wanted to move home, move countries. And of course, when we are living in this 3D world and people worry about the money and the resources and all that. So I love what you brought through, like when we are in a certain timeline, and if there is sort of like probably a combination of guidance, but also the human feeling or experience that, okay, I think I need to move to a different country. But if the reality, because we always think when it's guided, then things are gonna unfold magically, synchronistically, which are sometimes the case, but sometimes when things don't happen so straight line, what would you say to, how do we follow this trust, this knowing or yearning that I wanted to move to different places, different part of the world, to move to a different, to meet with community and things like that?
Yeah, I think you brought up a great point. That's like a kind of like a half truth or half of the story is that when things are meant to be, or this is kind of the byline people usually know, when things are meant to be, it should be like easy and smooth. And like you said, that's like half of the coin. Like there's synchronicities happen and things go smoothly. But the other half is that, yeah, sometimes we'll meet obstacles. And it doesn't mean that that's not our path. It just means that there's something else going on. So we shouldn't like necessarily give up on the path because it becomes restrictive or whatever our goal was. In fact, maybe that's a sign. Some people interpret that as a sign that they should keep going that way. And I was just thinking when you're kind of formulating that question of this term that I've recently kind of studied or used called the power of restriction. And speaking of guides and spiritual forces, or you could say the universe, sometimes they put in like restrictive things, like you want to do something, but you don't have the money, or you want to do something, but the timing's off. And it's a little bit, like I said, like we're connected in this web, but it's more like we're aware of it super consciously, or maybe in our higher vibratory states of being clairvoyant or clairsentient, we can see more of the web than what's like what physically is in front of us. But because of that, we'll get restricted by the universe because we don't realize how interconnected we are. And like if we were to shoot off a little bit faster, or do something that's a little bit off the timing, but more like linearly, we would like to do, move at this certain date, then we will miss some of the other people who are connected to our timelines because they're not quite ready. I'm just giving examples to kind of make that meeting. So then we have these like universe puts in restrictions, like, oh, we don't have enough money right now, or we don't have the timing to move right now, for example, if it's moving. It sort of kind of hold us back in the physical space time so that those meetings will occur appropriately. Yeah, so that's what I found is that that might be in play, and that's probably always in play, this restrictive power.
And how would you suggest people to move through this restriction? Because some people will say, okay, then if it's not working, it's not meant to be, or maybe I'll just stay, or or perhaps there's an other new option. Because if we are always evolving in different time, well, different potential, maybe originally we thought we were meant to go to place A, and through the restriction, perhaps we still need to go to place A, but much later time, or maybe we need to go to place B. How would you support us to discern or like figure out what do I do instead of exhausting myself?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the whole key is how do you not get frustrated and exhaust yourself now that that starts to happen or it's like very commonplace. Yeah, I mean, I've been recently studying or restudying or revisiting this. Many people know about the Ho'oponopono work, which is a Hawaiian healing system. And it was popularized, at least in my kind of awareness, through Joe Vitale. who wrote a book about one of the main people who sort of made it very astonishing, Hugh Len, who kind of healed this psychiatric unit, prison psychiatric unit on Hawaii, just by saying these kind of four phrases. He did a lot of other things along this line, but I love you, thank you, please forgive me, I'm sorry. And one of the things I think with that is, in response to the question, is really being thankful and loving these restrictions. You know, like we don't know why, but when you come to, anything with that sense of love, that vibration and gratitude, like you're okay with it. He used a kind of very common example that, like, like we're looking for a parking spot, and then, but the universe puts us way far, like a mile away, like there's no park. Like you can just love that. And he said, because probably the universe is saying you need some exercise. We would rather have, the first spot, like right up next to the country club, in the background here. Same, like we'd like, like when we want to move, boom, like everything's there for us. But if we love whatever seems to be the restriction, I think that puts us in a very good state of mind to see what the universe is trying to say.
Right.
And then we feel comfortable and we're not burning, like you said, that energy of worry or fear.
Yeah, I love that. It feels like a very, it's not only about moving, it's not about, it's about everything, right? That like when we are going through a certain intense situation or experience in our life, the first thing is to accept and then move on to the space of grateful of, and to open to receive what exactly is the message here that I'm not seeing or I'm not hearing. And maybe there is some like treasure, like a jewel of wisdom that I need to, or healing, opportunity of healing that I need to experience in order for me to be like move on to the new situation. Because I think, right, that's mostly the restriction. Like people try to fight against it, and then we end up exhausting ourselves through the frustration and anger and all that.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's that frequency of consciousness, that either the love, those statements or the gratitude, or forgiveness, this transmutation kind of frequency really just puts us in the flow of the universe. And maybe what happens is the outer result becomes secondary or less important. So we're less grasping onto this like outer condition that we're looking for to happen, and we're sort of back, we're back to ourself and feeling comfortable with ourself wherever we are, whatever the condition is. I think these kind of this love, gratitude, forgiveness frequency puts us into that state.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. So I feel like very curious right now looking at the picture behind you, and I know you've recently had a sacred trip to Australia, and you have been taking people around the world to make contact with the ET, to connect with the land. And do you want to share, like, what does it mean for you when you feel like when you feel guided to go to sacred site, and what is it that you experience the most when you go on, I think, pilgrimage or journey like this?
Oh, right. Yeah. Visiting sacred sites or power spots or kind of spiritually kind of enhanced places. Of course, every place, like even where we live is sacred, and it is a sacred site because our consciousness kind of makes it so or brings that. But yeah, behind me is it's the Sunshine Coast of Australia, which is on the east coast. And it was called, this is a Noosa Beach, which is near a mountain called Mount Coolum, which is where I visited. And it's close to Brisbane, if people have, have an idea of Australia. Anyways, I think, we're filled with this companions in the in our space, I think, of spiritual beings. It was is the recognition. So wherever we are, there's many spiritual beings, spiritual consciousness, nature spirits, and angelic beings. And when you visit these sites, let's say you go somewhere, not or maybe in your country to visit a sacred site, just that kind of puts you in that right mode. Like you said, the pilgrimage. It's almost like it makes it special for you, so your consciousness starts to get attuned to that, although where you are could be that too. But just by having to make that kind of special trip, you get in the right framework to be very open or receptive. But I think a lot of the land spirits, they're very welcoming. They hold a lot of wisdom anywhere. That in this particular trip to Australia, I kind of really felt that. And they have a lot to teach, a lot to give. They can help, repair or kind of regenerate or rejuvenate your etheric body, which is I think a lot of people do subconsciously, just to go on a vacation to get away and recover, or just have some free time. So I think the etheric body is being rejuvenated by the spirits of the land there, and of course of the elements.
Because I feel I, not to take like categorize people, like we are, because we are all multidimensional. We have multiple purpose and missions to or experience to play with. So reincarnate, and so like some people would say they are the grid worker. They are one of their projects here as human is specifically to connect and to work with the grid and then to connect with the land to bring the healing to charge. And would you? I think you are so multidimensional. What would you say about like when people, whether they know themselves are the grid workers or not, but then they just love traveling, right? They just like feel so good when they travel.
Like that expertise, some people who've attended some of the trips, like the other ones, maybe recently, that I noticed some of the participants are very conscious that that's what they're doing. Like we're in, going to Egypt and Iceland, and they were doing their own ceremonies or grid work, whenever we would go to a site, in addition to maybe what the group was doing, because they're very aware of and have this kind of knowledge, and have learned, certain techniques to create this kind of grid around the world. So they know why they're kind of intuitively being guided to a certain location, like even within the tour, like all the different stops. So yeah, I definitely feel like that's one of the reasons, people are traveling, particularly on the sacred site tours, and why that's very a big part or very popular, in the spiritual kind of milieu now, that maybe some people are facilitators who are listening. Or they're also going on trips for that reason. And my own personal experience, yeah, it's sort of been a natural kind of offering or outshoot of just the healing work. And so maybe there is sort of this land healing, like you said, like we're healed by the land, like I mentioned, the spiritual, particularly the spirits of nature there. But then we, of course, bring our own information and energy. And even like you said, subconsciously, maybe we don't do a specific ritual, but just by being there, like the example would be, let's say you weren't there at that moment. So it's, you bring a lot there, even just by showing up physically in your body. So you exchange energy and information, and your whole history, soul history, and recent incarnational history comes there, like maybe from one location, maybe even just where you were currently living. You bring some information, it gets exchanged with the land.
And would you, because I know you've been taking people to, besides in the United States, you went to Iceland, Australia, you are taking people to Mount Kailash, Mount as well. So what do you have any conscious awareness of that, why you are being drawn to this specific place, like, for example, this specific part of Australia? Mount College, yeah.
I think personally, and also another theme of why people will travel, like this way, like to sacred sites, is past lives. It's not the only reason, but just to kind of highlight one piece is a lot, like why, if we are looking at this kind of spiritual travel log, maybe some a lot of tour operators who are in this kind of genre have many tours, but then we're drawn to one or two out of the 20, on someone's website, like of this spiritual operator, travel operator. And one piece may be past life resonance, where it was very important and of course positive. It also could have been left in a kind of a negative tone. Of course, everything is a learning experience. But there's something still to be like learned there, or like maybe even like a soul retrieval, a portion, or because it's familiar, it's like going back to family, and so you're almost going back to be rejuvenated on that level, because of a past life or past lives, having lived there on that land.
So I wonder, like, when we think of in the context of opening up to more of our soul gifts and multidimensionalities, would you say, like, going visit this sacred sites where we feel called, of course, is able to help us open up more, like almost like a fast track, is it, to our abilities and skills? Have you witnessed?
I think you brought up a great point, and I think that's also another main reason people are going, both consciously, they're very aware of that, as well as maybe subconsciously, is there are very powerful places, either there's temple places or natural powerful energies in these different locations. And then they open us up, accelerate us in a sense to receive a certain download. And that download, like just to integrate it with the other reason I was mentioning about past lives, could be from a past life where you develop something, and then it's currently like in your hard drive, but it's a little offline. It's like not on your screen. And then when you get to that site and that remembrance, comes back online. So like that skill or that ability or state of consciousness can be more accessible to you in this incarnation. And then secondarily, or in addition, new downloads, not something you developed in a past life, can occur in these kind of where there's powerful energies, and they open you up to that information. And so then you can receive these new downloads that may, give you gifts or abilities or new states of consciousness or new directions, incarnation.
Beautiful. Based on my own experience as well, like when we go to retreats or sacred sites and we feel very expanded and we hang out with like-minded people, similar frequency, and when we come home, it's almost like we feel restricted because of reality or because of the old dynamics with friends, with colleague and family. And so how do people deal with this contrast, how to, well, really continue to embody the downloads or the healing?
I've experienced that exactly what you said, and participants who have gone on the trips have also noted that, after post retreat or tour. I think, one of the things is to recognize there's always going to be not always, but there's usually a downshift because our maybe our day-to-day environment, is a certain level. And of course, we're going to these elevated places like climbing a mountain, either literally or figuratively, energetically, to receive these higher frequencies, and then coming back down the mountain, either literally or figuratively. There's going to be like this sense of the downshift. And one thing is just to know, like you said, I think it's great you pointed that out, is to know that it does happen. Because like when you first go, and maybe either the retreat leader, or you just weren't aware of that, and then you come home and that happens, and you feel maybe disappointed for a while that something like that did happen, or that you did something wrong. But actually, maybe it's like a natural part. But the thing is, like your personal, as well as now the environment you came back to, is raised. We're experiencing it as kind of the downshift, but actually your presence now or your experience has raised the overall environment where you kind of are day to day. So that's one of the things I think one of the maybe the reasons we're doing these trips as souls is that when we come back, we raise the frequency of the overall planet and the where we are, which may not be so-called as high a frequency as a unique sacred site, but over time it's like helping the people we meet and the environment we currently day-to-day live in.
That's beautiful because I know that where we are right now is where we are meant to be, right? Even when we think it's dense, it's low vibration, but that's why we are here or there, just to help raise or clear some of the stuff energy.
The stagnant energies.
Exactly. So I'm curious that, it brings up to the question also about relationship, because like when we go on healing workshop, retreat, sacred site, and we come back, and then I would like to think that generally, because of the work we do, we are seeing the shift within ourselves. And sometimes when we change, the dynamic with family or loved one will change. Our relationship will change organically, well, but sometimes it doesn't. It doesn't, it seems to actually create more friction. So I wonder if you will say something like that, how to deal with that.
Yeah, that's also actually maybe even as or even more important is like when if let's say you have a significant other or a relationship, close relationships, whatever it may be, romantic or not, like family members, and then you go away. And get less, it could be even a short retreat. Could just depends more on the intensity, like a weekend thing or 3 days or a tour, is usually longer. And then you're in this high vibe state, and then you come and maybe even like very purified and you come back. So some of the interaction is because you're vibrating so high, then what happens is you could, your partner, let's say, who wasn't there, is in that now in this new energy. But it could be too quick or too much of the contrast, and they get triggered, or you might get triggered too through them. And so this can happen. It's actually I wouldn't say common, but it's a, like what you describe is a well kind of well known experience. And again, I think the thing is to recognize that this can happen. So that when you come back and maybe your partner, like the issues start coming up all of a sudden for them, it's because now they're resonating and they're kind of clearing with you, your high vibe, and just to be understanding, to that is almost enough.
Right. Yeah, it brings back also to the point you were saying about accepting and move on to the space of being grateful that things are coming up, and what is the gift? What is the gift in this situation that we can receive? I know that you are going to offer a live experience to support people with relationships. So we'll be sharing that later in the email. I'm just wondering that, because we're coming to time just is so fluid. It's coming to an end of our time. And I wonder if you could bring through a short, maybe a short a practice to help us ground and integrate this the conversation, the wisdom, and also like help us through this eclipse, well, eclipse equinox period of the energy.
Oh yeah, maybe we'll have a taste of what will be in that offering, which will focus on enhancing our kind of multi-dimensional aspects of our relationships, whether that's with the soul partner, romantic partner, or family members, or even coworkers, or even just people you meet day to day. But yeah, we're gonna here we'll ask for the Arcturion's assistance to kind of balance our energy centers, our seven subtle bodies, in terms of enhancing this connection and this relationship with others. Yeah, so we'll get started. It'll be like a short, maybe like 5 minute transmission or meditative energetic experience. So we're starting first with the Arcturian frequency called Arcturian Dimensional Bridge, just to relax and center your system. Now we're channeling the Arcturian dimensional bridge to cleanse and then energize all your seven subtle bodies. That includes your physical, etheric, emotional, mental, causal, spiritual, and divine subtle bodies. Now we're formally beginning the Arcturian enhancing our spiritual relationships transmission. Bringing through these frequencies of love and joy, gratitude, particularly for all the relationships we have, which are reflections of ourself, some aspect of our soul. Well, we may have made agreements before we incarnated with old friends. We're all playing a unique and important role here in this space-time dimension, to unpack these agreements. This transmission is helping us to remember who those relationships were or are. Even remember what we agreed to. Like meeting old friends, but we forgot who they were. We feel like we're meeting them for the first time. That completes the short but intense remembrance and information of all our relationships that we're encountering in this life, either in the near past or present or in the near future. When you feel comfortable, you can open your eyes and snap your fingers.
Wow. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Wow. Yeah. Thank you, Jean, for the beautiful transmission and the beautiful conversations. I hope you enjoyed it. I
Oh,
definitely.
yeah. That was great.
Yeah, do you have any closing comments that you would like to share with the audience, like in the journey of really opening up to their more of their multidimensional higher self and multidimensional self in this reality as a unique fractal of the source?
Yeah, first of all, well, thanks for hosting these great platforms, these galactic retreats. I think that is really shifting things on the planet, the frequency, the vibration, also in the different multidimensional worlds, beyond the physical or what we don't necessarily experience as space-time, but are within our midst. I think this is having a tremendous effect on the planet. And yeah, I think as people open up to their inner experiences and are being guided, directly from their soul's information to trust that information, trust the kind of synchronistic times, the flow times, as well as realize that when there are sort of those obstacles we were talking about or the experience of restriction, that there usually is a deeper wisdom coming from our soul or our guides. Kind of moving us maybe in a certain direction that isn't sort of self-evident until maybe a little bit later, could be even be months or years later, where we kind of recognize the wisdom, but to trust or be grateful for those experiences too, and that tends to open things up in the moment.
Yeah. Oh my God. So beautiful. I just have so much gratitude. Really, I feel so grateful. Even before we started the conversation, and now I just feel so full. So thank you, Jean. Thank you for embodying your amazing expression in this human time right now. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. And
Thanks.
yeah, we also want to thank our audience. Thank you for tuning in. We definitely hope you experience the energetic transmission, the heartfelt connection, and also the wisdom coming through Jing and the Arcturian team. So thank you for tuning in. We wish you a beautiful day, enjoying being human. And until
Nice.
next time, take care. Take care.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.